Hip-hop is big business. According to Forbes magazine, hip-hop's top 20 earners raked in $415 million last year. There's no question that the music genre has had a pervasive influence on today's culture. It's the most popular music category for 8 to 18-year-olds. But with all of its success, hip-hop has also been the subject of heated debate and scorching criticism. Hip-hop's artists and their lyrics have been accused of misogyny, a hatred of women. It's true that many hip-hop lyrics focus on sexual conquests and are peppered with the B-word and other derogatory names for women. And some say that images of scantily clad females, usually strippers, reduce black women to sex objects and men's playthings. But to be fair, others argue that hip-hop is an easy target in a society where the sexual denigration of women is a widespread part of American culture. And why criticize an economic engine that has been responsible for the lifting young black men out of poverty and desperation? This is Central Standard, and I'm Susan Wilson. Today, we delve into the many sides and contradictions of misogyny in hip-hop and explore whether hip-hop should be held more accountable for the music and images it creates. Joining us today, we have Glenn North, poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Susan.
And we also have Angel Newton, who's MC with Holy Hip-Hop Group Heroes. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
And last but not least, we have arts educator and MC Stacy, a.k.a. Reach Smith. How are you?
Good morning.
So as we start this discussion, it's important to note that hip-hop has always been male-dominated, but it's not always been misogynistic. So how was it different in the early days, and what caused it to change?
Well, I think in the early days, you know, in its nascency, it was party music. It's kind of a derivative of disco. Young people in the Bronx who didn't have the money necessary to go into some of the popular discos in the mid and late 70s, you know, would hook up in the park and DJs would play music, and thus hip hop was born. But it's gone through many phases, and I think that Probably in the early 90s, with the advent of the popularity of so-called gangster rap, we started to see these images of women in videos and the language that you referred to earlier becoming more prevalent.
Stacy?
I mean, just to follow up on what Glenn said, you know, ultimately when hip-hop began, it was very much born out of this need to create a vehicle for self-expression. So in the beginning, you really just saw the angst of the communities, which, you know, hip hop was kind of born out of this socio-political angst. People were dealing with the realities of their communities economically. And so at that time, it was really about people just expressing their own idea and really kind of answering that. And as over time, as hip hop has grown, hip hop has really had a chance to delve into some of its own ideas that it inherited over time.
So I guess it's important to note before we launch into this discussion of misogyny and some of the negative images that there were some positive influences with the whole hip-hop movement, were there not?
Absolutely. You know, I refer to it as being party music, but as Reach, you know, added, it was also also about creating a voice for those who have been unheard for so long. So, you know, with the message, with Grandmaster Flash, you know, there became this awareness that we can really use this music for a platform. And so then you started seeing artists like KRS-One and Rakim and Public Enemy, who were really showing that positive rap and conscious rap was commercially viable.
Now, as we talk about this whole subject of misogyny, one of the things that we want to get on the same page about is, what is misogyny in hip hop? How do you define it? How do you see it?
I would see misogyny as just a lack of regard for women. Just pretty much a hatred in so many words towards women. A lot of people don't know or don't realize that it is hatred, but it is. It's just pretty much not showing any respect towards women, just looking at them as objects or just something that you can accumulate, just something that doesn't really have value. That's how I perceive it.
Now, of course, one of the issues that gets talked about a lot is the use of the B word and the H word in the lyrics. But what do you say to the rappers who say, well, you know, I'm not really talking about those righteous women. You know, if you're one of those, then that's who I'm talking to. What do you say to them?
I think that idea alone kind of underscores this idea of misogyny, that there's some distinction to be made between women who are after their money and the women who are not. I think that's ultimately one of the problems, is that there is this kind of balancing and determining which women are worthy of those titles and which ones aren't.
I also think that there's enough blame to go around. I think that the industry sometimes promotes because they know that it's going to make them financially successful. You know, these young men who are portraying these images where women are just their playthings, or that they are so that machismo, you know, that they have. So this image becomes a part of that whole image is your ability to you know, manipulate women. There's the industry, there's the individual responsibility of the rapper, as you talked about, the person who's actually using this language. And then there's our responsibility as consumers in terms of who we support. So I'm an artist and I'm never for censorship, but I'm very much interested in critical thought. And I think that we have to challenge the industry. We have to challenge the artists, because language is powerful and they are in the forefront, and they do have an impact on young people who are listening to their music.
Well, the other aspect of misogyny that people talk a lot about is these themes of exploitation of women. You see strippers, you see prostitutes, there's the whole pimp culture with Don Magic Juan and some of the videos. What's that about?
There's an entire industry really based around being a video vixen, strippers, that in some ways is kind of conjoined with hip hop. And so we're seeing women often being given opportunities to participate in the music videos and in the imagery of hip hop. And it comes at a price. And some of these women have used it to launch their careers, but ultimately have still been dogged by, you know, the way that they've been received in the world, in the music industry, is also in the community, in the society at large.
I think a lot of these women just pretty much lack a sense of value for themselves. The culture of being a video vixen and just things of that sort, it's glamorized. And so I think that they feel some type of validation by the spotlight, and they're not looking at the fact that they are being demeaned by having to do that to get ahead.
Reach used the word inherited, and you know, I recently have been reading through a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and looking at it from a historical perspective, I just wanted to note that my grandmother's father was born into slavery. So we have not outdistanced the shadow of slavery yet. And on the plantation, men who were able to breed were given, you know, there was kind of a hierarchy amongst the slaves, and a man who was able to produce babies through, you know, the word that the slave masters used, of course, was breeding. That particular slave was held in high esteem. And so then we see, you know, men who have grown up with that mentality, black men, that women are objects, because black men were not able to protect their women in a slave society. That was emasculating. And so what happened is it was easier to view women as something other than human, so that he didn't feel the pressure of having to protect her. And then, you know, you kind of fast forward to the 70s, and that whole image resurfaces with pimp culture.
And the black exploitation movies.
Yeah, exactly. And those people who were the progenitors of rap, that was their generation. That was their culture. And so it's just a cycle. You know, it just keeps being passed down from generation to generation.
So you're suggesting that even though slavery was a long way in the past, some say, it still has evidence in today's culture.
Yeah.
In the misogyny.
And I would argue it wasn't that long ago. I mean, America is a very young country, as you know, the age of a nation compared to, you know, when you look at it from a global perspective. As I said, my grandmother's father was born into slavery. That's not that long ago.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Susan Wilson, and our guests today are Glenn North, Angel Newton, and Stacy, a.k.a. Reach Smith. Now, Angel, I have a question for you. There's a lot of women who listen to this so-called misogynistic rap music. I see them driving along, bumping their heads in the car. What do you think about women who actually listen to this and appear to enjoy it? And if you talk to them, they say, well, I know they're not talking about me.
Honestly, I would say that it's easy, just coming from the standpoint of a young person, it's easy to get drawn into the culture. Unfortunately, a lot of young women my age get caught up in the beat, get caught up in, oh, well, this is hype or whatever, and they don't really pay attention to what the rapper is actually saying. So they don't look at it as them being disrespected by this rapper calling them the B word or the H word. They look at it as, oh, well, I know he's not talking to me because I'm not one, but I feel like if they were actually to take, if they would actually take the time to listen to what the rapper is saying and see how it affects women as a whole, they would, you know, have another perspective. If they would change their perspective on the thing, then they wouldn't want to, you know, contribute to that or listen to that. Because, you know, I've been one when I was younger to enjoy a song and not realize that I was being disrespected in the process.
Today we're discussing hip-hop music and whether it promotes negative images of women. Are you concerned about the messages that youth are listening to, or do you feel hip-hop is getting a bad rap? Either way, join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 235-2828, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, I'm going to bring up a controversial subject here, because there are some who say, why are we criticizing misogyny in hip hop when it exists in the black church, where black women do all the work, yet they're not allowed in the pulpit and they're kind of treated as second class citizens? And so for black community members who criticize hip hop, is that a valid criticism?
Yeah, it's a valid criticism, but I think we do have to look at it from a broad perspective. We specifically, those of us who are here with you today, are interested in hip hop because that's our culture. It's something that we love, but it's not removed from American culture and the misogyny that exists there, or as you said, that exists in the church. So I think that this conversation becomes a springboard so that we can start a dialogue that will hopefully interrogate anywhere we see misogyny. And the church is not above criticism. But I think that, you know, it's not like we're trying to say that hip hop is more guilty than any other institution. It just so happens to be our focal point because of our particular interests.
Absolutely. And I do think that the black church and the racial politics in not just the black church, but having been raised in a black church, I do think that that's one thing that has, in a sense, informed hip hop's perspective on women. And I think, again, when you see the underscoring of that point that women are not treated as equals, you know, there again, we're seeing the society and the culture at large inform what hip hop is. Hip hop doesn't exist in a vacuum. So everything that, you know, a lot of these MCs have been raised in black churches and have seen the tortured gender politics in black churches. And so, again, all of these things, ultimately, these chickens end up coming home to roost at some point.
Definitely parallels. My mother is a minister. And with myself being a female rapper, there's definitely a lot of things that we have in common with the treatment that we've undergone. And it's definitely a mentality of misogyny and when we see like chauvinist type behavior. So I think that it is a very valid argument in both cultures, in the church culture and in the hip hop culture.
Now, speaking of female rappers, you have Nicki Minaj and, of course, Foxy Brown. And some people say that they just perpetuate these misogynistic images. And then other people view them as, hey, they're empowering themselves in a male dominated genre like hip hop. Where does the truth lie?
Honestly, I don't see it so much as an either or. I see it more as a both and. I think in some ways, Nicki Minaj is empowering young women to use their voice in a creative way and in a creative way in terms of business and how they're being represented and received in hip hop. But I also think some of the imagery and some of the themes in her music may kind of, you know, it may be a situation where it's one step forward, two steps back. I definitely think there is. Both of those things have a place at the table, and I think both of them deal with, you know, hip hop as it is today.
Definitely. I would have to agree. A lot of times they are being independent in that they're making their own money and they're taking steps to do things in their career. But a lot of times their message can get lost in the delivery. So though they're pushing maybe to do your own thing and to be free, how they present themselves a lot of times is sending a double message, and it's a contradiction, because I shouldn't have to take off my clothes or be indecent on the outside and tell you that, you know, I made it or whatever, because, you know, I just don't feel like some of the things that they do is beneficial to our young black women.
So there's a delicate balance between kind of taking control of your sexuality and expressing that and playing a stereotype, I guess.
Yes, ma'am.
So the three of you are involved in something that's coming up. It's a discussion in the community about hip hop. Do you want to talk about that for a moment?
Sure. This is Women's History Month, and I am an employee of the American Jazz Museum, and that's a month that we've always taken seriously to honor all the accomplishments that women have made in jazz. Reach and I had, along with Herman Meharry, sat down a couple of years ago and decided to start a program called From Bebop to Hip Hop to explore the relationship between rap and jazz music. But to kind of fast forward, we were having a discussion one night about a certain song by Lupe Fiasco called Be Bad. And it deals with all the things that we're talking about today. It's an incredible song. And Reach said, you know, we should have a panel discussion that deals with that. And I said, yeah, we really should. It was we were having such a great conversation. And I said, you know, it would be great for us to have it during Women's History Month. So it'll take place tomorrow, March 27th, in the atrium of the American Jazz Museum, which is located at 1616 East 18th Street. It's a free program, and we've got some great panelists. Reach has done a great job of reaching out to people such as Angel and Yusef Harris, who will also be there. Nisha Gamble, who has a long history here with local hip-hop artists, so that we're going to, you know, look at this some more. I think it is going to be a great evening.
Well, and I think that the lyrics that you're talking about from Lupe Fiasco, he really talks about this inner conflict that he has about should I listen to this or should I feel uncomfortable with some of the hip-hop lyrics. Let's take a caller. Henry from KCMO, good morning.
Good morning. I like your show. I'm an African-American, and I just want to say, you know, first, I kind of disagreed with, you know, the idea that some of this harkens back to slavery. I understand the parallel, but I think it's a global thing. I think it has more to do with the worldwide subjugation of women. And it's not any more acute in the African-American community than it is anywhere else, or in the African-American hip-hop industry than it is in any other of the dominant cultures' art forms. The problem is that we only have one or two outlets for other people to see what African-Americans are about. And they happen to be hip-hop and TV and other, you know, forms of entertainment like that. And the people who have been elevated to tell our story and let the world in on what African-Americans are about are the worst people the African-American community has to offer. Former pimps, former prostitutes, confessed murderers. These are the guys who for years were promoted by the dominant culture to tell our story. And so they just told the story from their negative, narrow-minded perspective. And that fed on itself, because then we, you know, as African-American survivors, we're just going to survive and say, well, okay, if that's the story they're telling, we're going to embrace it and we're going to make this our cool way of being. But every time I look at rap music or lots of art forms, forget about it. You can just look at a Madea movie sometimes. I mean, it's not just hip-hop. I think, well, who are these guys telling our story? This is what other people are looking at us and saying, this is what we're about. And they don't represent anywhere near the majority of African-Americans.
Okay,
and they do this in white culture, too. But there's so many other outlets that you do get a better perspective.
All right, so let's hear from our guest here. What do you think about this caller's point?
Oh, he made an incredibly valid point, and I respect his right to disagree. But I do think the experience of the black man in America is unique. I don't think that you can compare it to any other person, you know, any other ethnicity or any other it's unique. And so I do think that you do have to look at it from that perspective, because that's part of the black experience. But as I said, when you look at sex trafficking, when you look at what's going on globally, when you look at what's going on in mainstream culture, as Reach said, hip hop is not operating in a vacuum. But I do think that we have to criticize it. I mean, you know, not as, you know, above and beyond any other thing that we criticize. But this just happens to be the discussion today. You know, we're looking at it in terms of how it manifests itself in hip hop culture, particularly.
Let's take another caller. Nicholas, good morning. Welcome to Central Standard.
Morning. My name is Nicholas, and I run Somos Agency. It's an agency here in Kansas City that exclusively represents ethnic talent. And with that, we get a lot of calls from video producers, and they're asking us for female African-American talent to be in their videos. And typically it's to be that background video girl. And we have decided that, I mean, we made a point a few years ago to stop supplying that type of stuff, because ultimately the conversation was extremely uncomfortable on everyone's part. They're paying those girls basically maybe $100 a day to be in the background and just exploit themselves. And then, of course, when they get onto the videos, they're looking exploited as well. And we didn't want to participate in that, so we made it a policy not to supply that type of talent anymore.
Well, It sounds like you're taking a good moral stance on this, but I guess others are not. What do you think about this, my guest today?
Well, I think the reality is that media is creating the images for our young people to see.
And you're saying?
And we didn't want to support stereotypical views that people might have of ethnic minorities. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when that type of role comes around, we just refuse to take that, because it's why play into the stereotypes?
Right.
And that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yes.
Now, this particular agency is taking the higher ground, but since sex sells, not everyone takes this stance, do they?
No, it's not always profitable. But I think that we have to, at some point, also create a discussion that helps people, the industry, artists, and the consumer realize that it's not just about money, the things that are really of value in life are priceless, you know, honor, faith, courage. And I'm not trying to get all deeply philosophical, but sometimes you do have to make a decision that you're not going to just chase dollars if it means compromising your principles. And for his agency to take that kind of stand, I really applaud that.
It's definitely commendable.
Isn't that part of the issue, though, that some people argue that, you know, we could do positive hip hop, we could do clean lyrics, but it just doesn't sell?
Yeah, I think to some degree that's a valid point. But that's another layer to the issue, is just dealing with the idea of whether or not images that reinforce positive things can be profitable. And I think that all depends on how the industry is being supported and how it's being held up. And if you're getting this unbalanced slate of images coming from the industry, it can be difficult sometimes for artists to want to take that route.
This was Glenn North and Angel Newton and Stacey Reach Smith. Kansas City, have you experienced inner conflict when you listen to hip-hop music? Or do you worry about the negative impact on youth? Tell us by calling 816-235-2888 or post your comments on Facebook. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we continue our spirited discussion about hip-hop and some local efforts to create alternatives to misogyny and violent themes in hip-hop music. Central Standard returns in a minute. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson. That was today we're talking about hip-hop music and the criticism that lyrics and images of hip-hop perpetuate hatred and perhaps even give the face of the community a bad image. Our guests today are Glenn North, poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, Angel Newton, who's the MC of the Holy Hip-Hop Group Heroes, and arts educator and MC Stacey, a.k.a. Reach Smith. Now, we were talking before the break about the industry and how the industry itself, because sex sells, because what's provocative sells, has a role to play in promoting misogyny in hip hop music. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what we see happening in modern culture is that you have corporate entities that oversee the music industry rather than the artist. And so with that being the case, the bottom line becomes more important than artistic expression or creating a balance in terms of what's being presented. And so, you know, we've been saying throughout the course of our dialogue that sex sells. And unfortunately, that statement has repeated so much because it's true. And so they know that that's a guarantee. So rather than putting creative thought behind what they're presenting, they're basically chasing the dollars. And because, if Puff Daddy or Jay-Z, you know, somebody like that has $400 million, you can only imagine the people who are behind them, how much money they have. And so they have to take some of the blame for what's being presented. And they need to be in some way challenged, I think.
But as we were talking before, music business is like any other business. Whatever sells, whatever the market demands. How do you change the demand for this kind of misogynistic, violent, provocative music? Because people are buying it. Otherwise, the industry wouldn't be selling it.
I think you change it by challenging people and by presenting options. Hip-hop in its last generation was a lot more diversified in the themes that artists were putting across. And I think there are enough people who would be interested in images that weren't overly sexualized, where women weren't objectified and commodified, just as well as there are people who there's a market for that. And I think, you know, the presentation of different options by the industry would definitely help artists in their approach to their music.
And I know whether or not people agree with it or not, I know that the young women at Spelman, it was a huge deal. You know, the artist Nelly had put out a video called Tip Drill that he was basically using women's behinds as an ATM, you know, as a slot for an ATM machine or what have you. And they took a stand. They challenged him, and they got a lot of attention. And I know that Essence Magazine has a campaign called Take Back the Music. So I think that we as consumers also have a responsibility to stand up and to say we do not necessarily want to censor anybody. It's not like we're trying to point the finger or be overly judgmental. But can we have some balance here, and can we have some accountability?
Now, I have a question for Angel from Marvin. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
You had a question for Angel?
Yes, Angel. I heard you mention that you had once listened to hip-hop. However, you no longer listen to it. And I was wondering what caused you to change your perception of hip-hop in reference to how it spoke of women.
Okay. I'm sorry if we kind of got that misconstrued. I still listen to hip hop. I stopped listening to the hip hop that demeaned women. So I was saying that there was a time in my life where I would listen to songs that were full of the B word and the H word and different things like that that were directed towards women without recognizing that that is disrespectful. But I still do listen to hip hop.
So what you're saying is, you know, people need to recognize hip hop is a broad genre. It's not just about the disrespect of women and their art choices.
Right.
Exactly.
So let's now take a call from Lenexa. Alexander, welcome to Central Standard.
How you doing?
What is your Hello. Question today?
Yes, well, I just want to make a point that we need to take control of our art form. As African Americans, we've been through a lot, from slavery, racism, Jim Crow, whatever. But through all of that, we have contributed to many art forms, be it jazz, blues, rap, hip hop. And we need to quit commercializing and selling, you know, our story, you know, our plight, or you know, the negativity, whether it be negative or positive. We need, because I think it's getting to a point now where people don't take us serious anymore. We're kind of made into clowns or buffoonery, and they're not taking us serious anymore. And I like the point one of the persons made on your panel about when he went back to slavery, about us being men and not being able to protect our women, and now we have this going on. And when you sit down and think about it, it is truly disappointing. But there have been some positive aspects about hip-hop. You had Master P, he had his own record label. And we can have our own distribution deals. I think we need to be more independent, have more control over our art form so we can get the messages out. People may not necessarily want to hear them, but I think we have to set aside making money and having the bloom and concentrate more on getting the message out, you know, because I think people are just not taking us serious anymore, and we're just something to sell. And, you know, I think that needs to be major changes in that.
What about this caller's point that hip-hop kind of promotes these stereotypes of black men as violent, et cetera, and we need to stop selling out?
I think he made some incredibly valid points. I wish I could talk to Puffy and Jay-Z and Master P. I mean, if there was really a mass movement and those people who were in those positions in hip-hop culture made the decision that they were going to, become independent and really focus on how they wanted to manage the music, I think that would be incredible. I think oftentimes we have a lot more power than we give ourselves credit for.
Definitely. I think that we just need to change our thinking. Life is so much more than money, and that's a lot of what is said in a lot of hip hop today. It's all about money, all about material things, and nobody's thinking about the legacy that they're leaving behind and the young people that are looking up to them. What are we giving them other than the hope for material things, you know. So,
but playing devil's advocate, some people would say, look, we look around our nation. The schools in our major cities are bad. People are coming out undereducated. They don't really have a hope for the future. And what hip-hop has done is allowed young black men and some women to really use hip-hop as a way to make money, to get out of desperate conditions. So should we just shut that down and say, don't be a sellout, be a poor, starving artist?
No, I don't think so. But
I'm just kind of, you know, right. dramatizing the point here.
I don't think that's necessary, but I do think that, you know, one of the things that I think about as a hip hop artist, and someone who's been raised on the culture, is this this thought that ideas have consequences, and so while it's always important and necessary for us to be able to be expressive in our art form, and to, you know, hip hop has helped a great number of people to get off the street, and hip hop has been a very lucrative art form for people. But I think we also have to think about at what cost that comes at. And sometimes when we're advancing this idea of misogyny in hip hop culture, it's very important for us to think about whether or not that is on balance with how people are profited from it.
Let's take another call from Sonia in Gladstone. Sonia, good morning. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. I really love your conversation. I love hip-hop, even though I'm older. I have a son that raps. Like the young lady said, we have to make choices. We have to make choices of what is positive, what is negative. One of my favorite rappers, he's been gone a while. His name was Tupac Shakur. There were two sides to him. There were times his music came out very negative, and then he came up with a song, Dear Mama and Hold Your Head Up. I believe he would have changed. I believe he would have became very positive before he was killed. And then there's Holy Hip Hop, which I love also, and one of my favorite rappers is Da Truth. Mm-hmm. Spelled D-A, even Truth. Mm-hmm. And his rap is very, very positive. So I don't think that taking away hip-hop would be, you know, and putting hip-hop, all hip-hop down is right, because some of it is very, very positive. Thank you.
Appreciate that comment. And I do think that people tend to focus more on the negative aspects and forget that, you know, even, and she mentioned Tupac was really kind of the poster child for both sides of the hip-hop argument, both in his ability to uplift as well as maybe denigrate at times.
Right. He, I think, kind of represents all of us. I think that, you know, we all have our dark side, and there is sometimes music that I listen to and I have to question myself. But I think that, you know, what Sonia said was very valid, and I think the point that Angel is making is that we do have to sometimes look for the choices. Like, to be honest with you, you know, mainstream radio doesn't always play what I want to hear. So I'm always asking Reach, what's hot right now? I'm always asking, you know, on the internet, looking for artists who are promoting positive images, or who are at least being creative in some way that isn't being represented in broader hip hop culture. And I try to turn people on to those artists so that, you know, I have to seek out my own balance if it's not being provided for me.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson. Our guests are Glenn North, Angel Newton, and Stacey Reach Smith. We're discussing misogyny in hip-hop and whether some possible solutions and alternatives, like positive and conscious hip-hop, can find viable audiences. Kansas City, what do you think about the hip-hop phenomenon and how it impacts our community? Tell us your thoughts by calling 816-235-2888, 235-2828, or post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We're at KCURCST. You know, you mentioned that there are alternatives out here in hip-hop, but don't you think the media machines with 24-hour access to media in general makes people lazy? They don't look for alternatives. They basically listen to what's played on heavy rotation.
Yes.
Definitely.
The short answer is yes. But I think that it goes back to what I said earlier You know, we can't be, I would challenge us to not be the Brave New World that Aldous Huxley talked about, and being, you know, entertained into this level of conformity and submission, and not being capable of critical thought. And I just, you know, I don't know if we were going to talk about this eventually, but I know just in terms of the hip hop, that's the culture that's taking place here in Kansas City, that reach is a very important part of that culture. And we have somebody in our presence that is, you know, on the forefront of using hip hop as a platform to communicate positive messages. And, you know, he works with young people in the community using hip hop as a vehicle to talk about some of these difficult issues and to help young people find their voice. So, there are people out here. There are more reaches out here, and we need to support them.
And speaking of young black males, hip-hop has been a very positive way to connect with young black men through hip-hop. And actually, we have a caller that has a question or a comment about young black males. Good morning, Grover. Welcome to Central Standard. Grover? Well, we'll go on to the next caller. But why do you think that hip hop is such a good way to connect with young men today, when other kinds of programs that people may use may not work?
I think ultimately hip hop is kind of the language of young people, in a sense. And hip hop has been progressive in that it's helped us in advancing through other issues that we've had, like race relations. So, you know, hip hop can be a very positive force in helping young men about their own ideas about themselves and about women.
Let's go to USA in Basor. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
Great. I just wanted to comment about the relation of parenting in hip hop. A lot of times parents don't take time to listen to what their children are listening to or participate in a conversation that gives them a good vantage point or view of what it is that they're taking in. A lot of times, and of course we know those that are from the age of 30 to 40 or maybe even 30 to 50, if your parents weren't at home, then the television probably raised you or the radio raised you. That was part of your culture. You would call in on the radio station, and those songs that are being played kind of shape your growing up and the things that you believed in and things that shape you as a person. So we also have some responsibility as parents to be involved in what our children are listening to or what they're watching on television.
Well, I guess to my guests, what do you think about this comment? Do you think kids are on autoplay more often than not and don't get that critical discussion with parents?
Definitely. I believe that if parents were to have more of a presence in their kids' lives, that would definitely shape their convictions and their morals to where they would be able to decipher what's wrong and what they shouldn't follow and what they should. And so they would have a better judgment on the decisions that they make in the music that they decide to listen to.
Well, why do you think these discussions aren't happening more with parents these days and their children?
It's kind of part of what you talked about. I think that people, by and large, are busier than they've ever been in American culture, that young people have more access. It used to be just the TV or just the radio. Now it's the cell phone and the internet and, you know, tablets. And so young people have unparalleled access to things that they might not always, that they, you know, perhaps shouldn't be listening to or shouldn't be exposed to. I'm not a parent, but I do work with young people in the community, and I think that although you can't catch everything, although you can't protect them from everything, you have to create a safe space where you can talk about some of these things so that you don't necessarily always shield them from what they see, but you give them, you equip them with an understanding so that they become critical thinkers, so that they become, you know, moral beings, and so that they are prepared to be responsible for what they consume. But you have to, I think, create a space where those kind of conversations can take place.
Right. And for the record, that caller was Yousef Harris. He'll be one of the panelists on the symposium tomorrow.
Oh, very good. Next, we have Doug from KCK. And you have a question about the business model of the hip-hop industry. Doug?
Hi. Hey, always, it's a great show, and it's been wide-ranging and interesting. You know, part of a theme that's gone through the show has been some sort of hand-wringing about disturbing aspects of hip-hop culture. And I would offer that any art form, if it's any good, is going to be disturbing to some people at some time. And so maybe that's not the big issue. And what I was asking about in the business model is this. Another theme that's been in the show is a sort of tension between artistic freedom and the need to make money, or the control aspect of the business. And several of your panelists have said something along the lines, I'm kind of paraphrasing, that, you know, that the companies need to take responsibility. The companies are forcing artists in a certain way to enhance sales. And I'll take my answer off the air, but I guess I'm just not buying it. You know, the creative aspect of hip-hop is so intense and so far-reaching. I can't really see that the companies could go to an artist and say, we want to influence your art, we want you to be creative, and say some horrible things about women because we'll make more money. I think that it just can't happen that way, that the artists do whatever they do, and that the business model of the publishers is to publish whatever the artists come up with. I just can't see it the other way around. And if I've misunderstood what you're saying, then, you know, maybe you can clear that up. But it seems to me that really the direction is from the artist to the business company to the public, and
let's see what our panelists think.
First of all, clarification. Part of what we're trying to do with this symposium is to talk about this discussion in a broad way. And I think one of the things that tends to happen when we have this discussion is it's always, your liberal side, your conservative side. So there are always two parties at the table. And you always get the one side that says it's the culture at large that's at fault. Hip-hop is not at fault. Hip-hop has inherited these ideas. And then there's the other side of it that wants to blame hip-hop for misogyny in American society and abroad. And I think what we're trying to do is, again, take that both-and approach and find out where those two pieces connect. To address the issue of labels, I think one thing it's important to keep in mind is that these artists are under contracts. And, again, hip-hop doesn't exist inside of a vacuum, so you know, misogyny exists outside in the culture at large. So you're getting cues from Hollywood, you're getting cues from print media. So there's already a culture and an economy where sex is selling. So it's not as though hip hop comes in the door and it doesn't exist in the same space with all of these other forms of media that are already selling sex and are already using women as objects. So this is just another opportunity in another industry where people can profit on this idea that sex sells. And again, these artists are under contract. So labels are looking to protect their bottom line, and they're looking to do so in a way where they don't take chances. So if they're seeing that music over a long period of time, over at least the last generation of hip hop, has been successful and has been profitable in a certain way, in a way that objectifies and commodifies women, then naturally they're going to take that. That's going to be the road that they take into the future. It's not as though that other ideas can't be profitable, but, you know, labels really aren't into taking chances when it comes to their bottom line. So, you know, artists do have a responsibility over and above what the industry would want, but it's also important to understand that these labels are made of people who, you know, where it used to be people in the music world were artists themselves. Nowadays, a lot of people who are running labels are people who have Wall Street backgrounds. So, you know, we're not here to assail the industry and not also challenge the artist. I'm an artist and I'm one of the co-creators of the event. So it is important that we think about the images that we put across. But I think it's a both and, not an either or.
So next we have Gregory from South Kansas City. Gregory, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I've been really interested, really enjoying this discussion. You guys have been doing so well. I live in South Kansas City, but I moved here from New York about 8.5 years ago. one of the first things I did when I moved to Kansas City was connect with the American Jazz Museum, the Blue Room, because I did spoken word poetry. So I met Glenn there, an incredible connection. I just want to say you guys are doing tremendous work here, and I was blown away at the quality of the artists that I saw there. So just want to say that. Also, incredible work, Heroes, that whole album, Hot, Team Below Boy, just want to give him a little shout-out. Ryan, just all those, all that crew's done incredible work, so just wanted to say that. I had a question, and that was, in addition to this symposium, what are some other organizations and groups that are doing this work and engaging in this good fight?
All right, thank you for that call. Yes.
Well, I'll just kick out the discussion. You know, I'm a poet, and I think that spoken word and hip-hop are kindred spirits. So I'm in the process of organizing a citywide poetry slam that's affiliated with a slam that originated in Chicago called Louder Than a Bomb. The title of the festival that we're promoting is taken from a Public Enemy song, The Collective Voices of Our Youth Are Louder Than a Bomb. So we're going to use hip-hop pedagogy to have spoken word in the surrounding school districts for a citywide poetry slam in the spring of 2014.
Well, this was a hot topic today. There's many callers, and we want to thank our guests today, Glenn North, Angel Newton, and Stacy Reach Smith. You can subscribe to our podcast and hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. We tune in tomorrow as for the special coverage of grain safety and regulation. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Suzanne Hogan and help from Claire McInerney. Up to Date is next with a look at the hazards of demolition dust and jazz pianist Joe Sample. I'm Susan Wilson, and this is Central Standard.